Most business podcasts today focus on the 1%, the nationally known larger-than-life personalities, entrepreneurs, and celebrities with interesting business stories. Business Exit Stories shares the stories of the other 99% of unheralded entrepreneurs that own successful companies in manufacturing, retail, logistics, telecommunications, construction, food service, and in every imaginable type of business in every state and city around the country. These are the stories told by the deal makers that facilitate exits. These are the mergers and acquisition specialists, business brokerages, financial and wealth planners, CPAs, appraisers, and attorneys. By listening to their stories, you'll learn what the entrepreneurs and business owners they represent did right and what they did wrong when it comes to exiting their business through a sale or a merger. In fact, you'll not only learn how they avoided disastrous exits, but how they positioned their companies for an out-of-the-ballpark home run when they exited their business. And here's your host, Marvin L. Storm.
Today we have with us Andrew Rogerson. Andrew shares with us a transaction that involved a $65 million a year business that literally went to zero and ended up closing, even after the business had an offer on the table for a full $15 million. All of this happened because of a personal dispute between the owners. In another transaction, a high-tech remodeling company had accepted an offer on their company, but the buyers required compiled and reviewed financial statements for the past 3 years. We'll learn what happened when their CPA took too long to complete the accounting review. And then in another transaction, we'll learn about a 2% owner of the business, a shareholder, nearly cratered the sale of the business and how this actually got resolved. Finally, Andrew shares how a business owner really needs to think about what they're going to do after they sell their business and why this is so crucial in the sales process. This is Marvin L. Storm with the Business Exit Stories podcast. We're here today with Andrew Rogerson. Andrew, would you introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your business?
Yeah. Hi, Marvin. Thanks for having me on the show. Andrew Rogerson. I come with an accent from Australia originally. Moved to the US about 30 years ago for a couple of years with my wife and two young kids, and lived in LA. Decided that was a challenge, so we moved back to Australia and ran a family business. And after getting back to Australia and taking over the family business, I kept thinking about our experience in Southern California, and we eventually decided to come back. So we came back 25 years ago and bought a business in Los Angeles. It was in the travel industry. We were helping Americans go down to the South Pacific, Australia, New Zealand, Fiji, and Tahiti, and we were booking hotels and airline tickets and car reservations. And this thing called the internet was coming along. So I wondered what it would do to my business. And rather than just keep the business going and find out, I decided to sell it. And in retrospect, that was the right thing to do. So we sold the business. And then 23 years ago or so, we moved up to Sacramento. And I worked at Hewlett-Packard for 5 years and decided corporate America wasn't where I needed to be. And so about 15 years ago, I've been being a business broker, helping people buy and sell a business. And I really enjoy doing that. I've owned 5 small businesses over my career, and helping small business owners is what I enjoy doing.
Well, that's a good background for us to understand kind of where you're coming from. So why don't we move into some of the transactions you've been involved in, perhaps some transactions that didn't go all that well.
Yeah, no, it's one of the interesting things what I do. I'm a member of the California Association of Business Brokers and the International Business Brokers Associations, and we see about 25% of businesses selling. And so that means 75% don't. So there's a variety of reasons why they don't sell. And so let's touch on a couple of them. Happy to talk them through. And each transaction seems to be unique. That's the thing that's intriguing about what I do. There's no rubber stamp. There's no follow this formula and you'll be okay. They're all very different. And so, happy to chat about a couple of the failures, and perhaps we can talk about a couple of the successes as well.
All right. Well, why don't you go ahead and share some of the details of a transaction that didn't go all that well?
Yeah, this one was interesting. I had a die casting business here in the Sacramento area. Business was been going for about 12 years and did about $65 million a year in gross revenue. So a really nice company, established in the market and knew what they were doing. It was unusual because there was a general manager running the business. And he had a partner, a romantic partner. They had three children together, and she owned equity in the business, but they weren't getting on well with each other, and so they needed to decide what to do with the business because it was doing very well, generating about it was generating about $3 million a year in net income to the owners. And so, an attractive business. And they had expensive lifestyles, looking after their kids and doing the things they enjoyed doing. But the stress from running the business or the tension from running the business was too much. And so they asked me to find a buyer for them. So that's what we did. We took the business to market. $15 million purchase price, and we had all sorts of buyer interest. It was a business of great interest to the buyers.
And what type of buyers sort of came to the table that had an interest in what they were doing?
Yeah, there was a cross section of buyers, but an individual buyer, they would have struggled with the purchase because of the purchase price. So the buyers we were focused on were private equity groups and family offices. And we were trying to work with those private equity groups and the family offices that had a business in that space. We talked to a couple of buyers from the East Coast, and their interest was having a West Coast presence. And so that was what's of interest to them. And other buyers had similar stories where it was a fit for what they were currently doing. And so we call them synergistic buyers. There were synergies there that made sense for them to make the acquisition. And we had seven buyers that had that interest.
And tell me a little bit about how the transaction rolled out.
Well, the transaction didn't go anywhere. We weren't able to get the deal done despite having seven letters of intent. The tension between the general manager and his romantic partner was too great.
So when you say general manager, you're really talking about one of the owners of the business, though, right?
Well, interesting story, but I'll keep it simple. He didn't have any equity. He had equity at one point, but he decided to give that to somebody else. And he did that because he was dealing with another personal situation, and he divested himself of his 50% shares in the business. It added to the tension because his romantic partner was spending a lot of money, way more than what she was bringing into the business, because he was running the business on a day-to-day basis. So she was a passive investor, and that's where the tension came in. But because he didn't have control of the business, she was doing what she chose to do, and that meant for a bad situation. So buyers came, made their offers. We had seven, and as I say, we just couldn't get the deal done. And what happened was that the financial records of the business were under pressure, and money was going out, but nobody was watching the books. Or I think they were being watched, but they weren't. They were distracted by the tension in the relationship. There was 140 employees that worked in the business, so a lot of people there, a lot of different moving pieces. But the business fell apart. The IRS weren't paid their payroll taxes in one quarter, and so that made the IRS stand up and take notice. And they came in and filed a lien, and one thing led to the other, and eventually the business was closed down, and a full $15 million offer price never materialized. And in actual fact, a $15 million business was removed from the market.
So in this particular situation, you had a passive owner and a general manager that was running the business, and they weren't getting along. And because of those tensions, they didn't really pay attention, and some apparently got into some cash flow problems and didn't make a payroll tax. And when you don't do that, things happen very quickly, And you're telling me that the business was really forced to close and 140 employees lost their jobs along with their families.
Yep, that was the outcome. The I think there was an awareness of the financial precariousness of the business, but it became a personal thing for the parties to argue about things to the point where they were blaming each other. And so the blame game continued, and as a result, the business wasn't paying the IRS taxes, the payroll taxes, and I understand the state owed money as well. And so that tension just bubbled up and brought about the closure of the business.
Well, I guess the real takeaway here, if we were to look back on this transaction, is really making a decision on how exit is going to be executed is really critical when you have all these type of personal issues going on in the business.
That's right. Yes, the business is a living and breathing entity, and it needs to be looked after. No different to a child. You've got to look after your children, and the business is the same thing. It doesn't have a voice. The people looking at the business or the people involved in the business are the owners. And if they're not paying attention to the day-to-day details, or they can't rise above their differences, then here's a classic example of the outcome that a $15 million asset that buyers were willing to buy, that was eradicated, and a disappointing outcome.
Just because of the personal conflicts going on with the people inside the business.
That's right, and as a result, so many people were hurt. The employees, and there were suppliers that were owed money. There was just a cavalcade of things that happened once the business was being wound down. It just different people were hurt in different ways.
Well, that's a real tragic story. Why don't you share another story that was kind of challenging for you?
Yeah, this business was in the Bay Area in San Francisco, and once again, a very, really nice business. It's doing about $15 million a year in gross revenue, husband and wife business, both very good business people, and their focus was doing commercial remodeling of office space. So when a lot of tech companies in the Bay Area right now, their practice is to buy a building, or sometimes they'll buy a commercial floor in a location, and they want to remove everything. And this company would come in and remodel that office space for them. One of the more important areas in a business is the conference room. And so this business had a specialty of presenting high quality conference room with all the necessary bells and whistles with the technology and use of audiovisual equipment and those sorts of things. And so that's what got them their business, because their word of mouth was so good, because they really could produce a high quality conference room, and people would, guests to the business would come in and see the quality of the work, and they were successful winning new business because of it. So the business was doing exceptionally well, doing about $2.5 million a year in EBITDA, and the business was valued at about $7.5 million. And once again, we had lots of buyer interest. There was a buyer that had an interest that could see the opportunity to take what they were doing, and rather than just have it in the Bay Area, this company wanted to take it national and grow the business. And so they made an offer. Just a little under full price, but certainly attractive offer, which the sellers chose to accept. And as part of the conditions of the purchase or doing their due diligence, the buyers wanted a quality of earnings report, which isn't unusual in a business this size. And so the condition was that the seller required to pay for and organize the quality of earnings report. That was the negotiation that took place with the buyer and the seller. Often the buyer will do it themselves, but in this case, the buyers authorized the sellers to do it, and the sellers agreed to pay the cost. And So we went to work, working with a CPA to get the quality of earnings report put together. In this case, we were putting together compiled and reviewed financial statements. So it wasn't too cumbersome. And the challenge we had was that the CPA that was hired to do the work, he was in tax season at different times, and the bottom line is he at different times he was just way too distracted, and so the sellers were waiting for the work to be done to pass to the buyer, and the CPA unfortunately ended up killing the deal because he just took way too long, and the buyers became frustrated and the sellers became frustrated as well, and the deal fell through.
So what you're telling me is that the CPA had this engagement that he was to prepare reviewed and compiled financial statements, and he let other have his own business activity get in front of in tax season or whatever else is going on, and he never did complete the engagement that he was paid to do.
That's correct. And you know, the work being done was 3 years of work, compiled financial statements for 2 years, and then reviewed for the last year. And because he was so slow getting it done, it actually rolled into the next tax year. So now the sellers were left getting the next year's. We rolled around into the new tax year, and so we had to get that year done at an extra cost to the sellers. And by the time we got through the process, the CPA was still dragging his feet, and the buyers had said, "We're done. We're just not going to hang around any longer," and the deal fell through.
Well, in this situation, I guess the takeaway from this transaction is that you really need to have good advisors that understand deal flow and the time sensitivity of these type of transaction, and that time really does kill deals. And in this situation, after a lot of time passed and the CPA was unable to deliver for his client, they lost a buyer, and the buyer just threw in the towel and walked away.
That's exactly right. Yes. And, you know, when you hire these professionals, it's something you don't expect to happen. You know, they're licensed. And so we needed the CPA's license on these financial statements, because that's the attestation that the quality of the financial statements are accurate. And so he was a critical player in this, in the transaction at this point in time, but he wasn't able to deliver. And so, just a frustration for all the other parties involved, because so many things were on hold while this work was being done. We're trying to keep the sale confidential. We didn't want employees finding out and leaving, and we didn't want suppliers finding out. We didn't want customers finding out in case they didn't want to get their place their order for the business. So, you know, a critical service to get these financial statements done was having a ripple effect through the business, and the sellers were, you know, thinking, you know, we've sold the business, we, you know, this will all be okay, and so they'd moved into a different mode and had to make an adjustment when the buyer said, "We're done, we're not moving forward." And so lots of unseen things that can happen just from one person's actions.
Well, having good advisors that understand the transaction flow of a business is absolutely critical. I heard that time and time again, and here we have a story that reemphasizes that point. Well, why don't we move into a transaction you could share with us that kind of went well, and tell us a little bit about how that happened.
Yes, one of the transactions that went really well was a plumbing distribution that I was involved with about 4 years ago. Had a really nice history. The owners of the business started the business back in about the 1920s. And they were two brothers, and they came together and decided to start their own plumbing distribution business. And they had the business for a number of years, and they passed it to the next generation. And so the next generation was involved in the business, and the two brothers had married and had family, and so there were children that took over the business, and there were children from both sides of the families that were involved in the business. And we sold the business about 4 years ago. So the business was had a history, had been around for about 100 years. But what forced the sale was that the second generation were at retirement age. One of the brothers that one of the children that had taken over from the original founders of the business, he's at retirement age. He's in his late 60s, and he said to the 11 shareholders, "Hey guys, I'm at retirement age, and I need to be thinking of retiring."
And there was really no third generation.
That's
to
exactly right.
Step in and yes. Carry it on.
Yes, that was the story. There was no third generation. Exactly what you said, and so that's what forced the decision to sell the business, because it had been around all this time and been successful. They owned their real estate under 50,000 square foot building where the business operated from, and no third generation. So we had to look for a buyer, and it was a challenge because the business had been doing well, but this wasn't a business that everyone wanted to buy, and so it took time to find a buyer, and we eventually found a buyer, and he needed to qualify for an SBA loan, which we were able to work through. It was a slow process, but we eventually got there, and we were able to sell the business. And
well, in this situation where you have so many family members, how many other shareholders were there in the business?
There was a total. Well, there was 10. There was 11 in total, including the current general manager. So there were 10 other shareholders that were family members, and they were all family members. So there were no outsiders. They used to have a monthly board meeting of all the shareholders, which were the family members. So they all knew each other. And this transaction had an interesting outcome, or had an interesting byplay. One of the shareholders had 2% of the shares in the business, and we got down to the final board meeting to approve the sale, and he wasn't at the meeting. And as it turned out, his mother communicated to the other shareholders he wasn't willing to sell the business. He wasn't willing to sign his shares, I should say. And so the
so was there a provision that everyone had to be in full agreement for the business to be sold? It wasn't a majority situation.
Yep.
Where
no, you're exactly
a majority
right. Yep.
Carried the day.
No, we had to have 100% agreement from all shareholders for the business to be sold. And so you're exactly right. So that was a great concern, because we just presumed he would sell. He hadn't been working in the business, but he'd been collecting a dividend as being a shareholder, but he was never allowed to work in the business, and he held that grudge with him. And so when he found out he could disrupt the sale of the business, he was going down that path and said, "No, I'm not going to sign." And he wasn't at the shareholder meeting. He was at home, and we had a very good attorney helping with the sale. She was preparing all the legal agreements, and she said to the mother of this shareholder, "Look, why don't we go around and have a conversation with him, and let's see if we can have a conversation." So the mother took the attorney working the transaction round, and they met with him, and they had a personal conversation, and in the end he said, "Look, I'm not willing to sign the agreement, but I'll give my shares to my mother, and then I'll let her decide what she wants to do with it." So that was the skills of having a good attorney that said, "Okay, you don't need to sign this, but why don't you gift the shares to your mother, and she can take care of things." And so that's what happened, and we were able to get the deal closed.
Well, I guess the takeaway in a transaction like this, sometimes in a family business, the personal approach is better than a legal one, because this could have got real messy very quickly when a 2% shareholder is holding up the sale of a business of his 11 other family members. Things can go sideways very quickly. And sometimes, I guess, just sitting down and having an honest discussion can resolve things without getting involved legally.
That's right. Yes, the sale of a business, it's so personal, and so it's impossible to plan for these things. You have to respond as they happen, and having the right skills in place at the right time is such an important thing.
Well, let's move on to your maybe a kind of wrap up here with another transaction that went really well.
Yes, really enjoyed this transaction. I was working with a couple of doctors, and they both were involved in pediatrics in Southern California, and they they had a practice. They'd been together as two doctors for about 40 years, and so had a long history of working together. One was very much involved in day-to-day caring of the infants and in the pediatrics, just providing medical help. And the other doctor was more entrepreneurial, and he had an interest in doing research. And so he would be approached by a pharmaceutical company or some large company that wanted research work done on a particular project, and he had people in place to help him do that. And so he was a pediatrician. He was spending some of his week working just doing consultations with the mothers and the kids, and other time he would be focused on the research. And so they built a lucrative practice because of the research work they'd been doing. But when they first approached me, they were in their late 70s. I think they were 79 years of age, and they were deciding that yes, it's time to sell, and could I help them find a buyer? And what was interesting in this transaction is we put on the market, and we had five buyers over a period of about 18 months, and unfortunately, the first four buyers to come along, these two doctors were pleased to have the offers, but they just couldn't quite make that decision to sell the practice.
Why do you think that was?
Well, I think there was a couple of reasons. I think the most important reason was because they're doctors, and they enjoyed that that notoriety, or they enjoyed their reputations, and letting that go was such a big decision for them. One of the doctors had five children, and I think three of his children were doctors, and so he was a highly successful and well-known pediatrician in Southern California, and that reputation was important to him, and letting it go and retiring, that was more than he was able to handle at different times, and until we found the fifth buyer.
And the fifth buyer was at another practice, another doctor, or who actually ended up acquiring the business?
Yeah, in this case, it wasn't a doctor. It was an actual hospital system, and that's what's happening right now. I sell a few medical practices, and I'm seeing that more and more, where the hospital systems are buying these practices. And what's interesting is that the hospital bought the practice from these two doctors, but it was the purchase price was about $500,000 less than what they'd received from other offers. But because they'd gone through the four and hadn't accepted one, the hospital said, well, here's what we're willing to do. This is the maximum amount we're willing. And I think they even paid a little bit more because they had a very good relationship with both the doctors. And so I think they were willing, they paid more than what they felt they needed to. But that's what happened. And the doctors at this stage, I think it was about 2.5-3 years after we first put the practice on the market, they decided to accept, because now they were realizing that finding the perfect buyer wasn't likely to happen.
I've heard this so often, Andrew, that business owner has his identity so wrapped up in who he is, and he is the business. That's kind of his identity. When it comes time to let go, it's really, really difficult. It's kind of like having an identity crisis when it's time to exit your business. And what you're telling me is that the doctors had a similar situation because they were physicians and they enjoyed that status. It was really tough to let go and not have that business or that practice anymore.
Yes, that's right. And they were both very well-known pediatric doctors, so they had a really good reputation, and they used to go to conferences where they were met by other doctors, and they spoke at different events. They were highly successful, and just letting all that go was a challenge for them.
And I guess the cautionary tale here is that if one of our listeners out there is a business owner getting ready to sell their business, you really have to stand back and think what you're going to be doing after you sell the business, and really what your motivation in selling the business is, because the business is such a big part of your life that when that business is not there anymore, it leaves a big void. And sometimes that can have real consequences where business owners regret selling their business because they hadn't quite thought through what to do after they exit their business.
That's so true, and that's I see that time and time again. In actual fact, one of my rules now is when I'm first talking to the owner of a business who's thinking of selling, one of my first questions is to ask them, "What do you do if you plan to sell the business? What would you do if the business was sold?" And if their answer is, "I'm going to spend some time with the grandkids or play golf," my response is, "Well, you can do that now. You don't need to sell the business to do that." And so I really want them to give thought to what they plan to do once they free themselves up from the day-to-day, responsibilities of running the business. I really want a clear understanding of what they plan to do. Otherwise, if it's not too clear, I really want to hear that before it encourages me to spend my time to try and take it to market and find a buyer of the business.
Well, I think that's really good advice and something for our listeners to really think about as they go through the process of positioning their business for sale. Andrew, if some of our listeners out there would like to get a hold of you and talk to you, how would they do that?
Yes, they're welcome to do a Google search. That's an easy way of doing it. My first name's Andrew, and my last name is Rogerson, Rogerson. I do have a website that I add content to, three or four times a month. And so if you do a Google search, it should readily find me because of all the different articles and contents I've got out on the web for people to read and ask questions about.
All right, Andrew, thank you for sharing with us today. So this is Marvin L. Storm with Business Exit Stories. We'll see you on our next podcast.
Join us on our next episode when our guests will share more stories of how entrepreneurs, founders, and business owners have exited their businesses and learn about what to avoid and what you need to do to successfully position your business for a successful exit. If you enjoyed this podcast, take a minute to give us a rating on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts so aspiring entrepreneurs everywhere can find us. If you wish to reach out to any of our guests, please visit our website at www.businessexitstories.com where you can find more information. Join us next time for more Business Exit Stories.